It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to the Innovation Economy Podcast, where we look at the factors that drive business growth, including how people, processes, platforms, and places work together to create the future of work. I'm your co-host, Bonnie Habian. I'm a CMO, author, speaker, branding expert, and passionate content creator. This episode is part of our Brand the Change series, which focuses on how entrepreneurs and engaged employees can leverage their personal brand to support their company, showcase their skill sets, and create value. To listen to the latest episodes or sign up for the Innovation Economy newsletter, go to innovationeconomy.show or click follow on your favorite podcast app to make sure you hear the latest episodes. And now, onto the show. Today, we're talking about what CEOs think of entrepreneurs and if they proactively hire them to fuel their business. An entrepreneur, as we know, is an individual within a large corporation who takes on entrepreneurial roles, responsibilities, and initiatives, working within the framework and safety of a company to innovate and develop new products, services, or business lines. Joining us is an entrepreneur and CEO who certainly knows a lot about the necessary skill sets required to build a thriving company. And we're going to get his take on the importance of innovative spirits in supporting growth and success. Ira Zlotowicz is the founder of G Parency, a commercial mortgage brokerage firm that has disrupted the traditional industry by providing transparent pricing while also leveraging automation and technology to streamline the experience. Welcome, Ira. Who would have thought we'd be sitting here speaking on a podcast together? I've always admired your entrepreneurial and innovative mindset, and I know you will have a lot to say about this topic. So let's dive right in. I recently listened to your podcast called Pique Your Interest, and you referenced rainmakers and how they can make a huge impact. I guess rainmakers and entrepreneurs have some similar characteristics, so I'd like to hear your thoughts on rainmakers and entrepreneurs and if you actively hire them.
Okay, first of all, thank you very much for having me. Yes, it's great to take our in-person relationship at events, now doing it on a podcast. You know, the world is around digital to...
I'm full circle.
Full circle. So I say, like, where's my office located? They say Zoom USA.
You know? Absolutely. So absolutely. And good for you. And congratulations on building an incredible business.
Thank you very much. Love watching you
thrive and grow.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, there's a close correlation between an entrepreneur and the rainmaker. The difference that I noticed between the two is a rainmaker usually is someone like a great salesperson. You know, they have all these fancy terminology, but at the root, it's a salesperson who goes out and knows how to bring in business. An entrepreneur is a salesperson that also has a business side to them. That's why I found that's where the rub, that's where it meets. Many salespeople live for the sale today. That's why the negative connotation. Now that you have an entrepreneur, like I'm going to actually use this to just hit me while I'm talking to you. A rainmaker is the middle of the road. To the right, what makes a better than a rainmaker is an entrepreneur, a rainmaker that also has a business sense. What's the negative of a rainmaker? What they stereotype as a used car salesman, where they literally just get the sale out the door, they don't care about reputation. So a rainmaker brings in good business to a company and grows, then the entrepreneur to the next level. So as a business, I always wanted to try to find, at a minimum, that rainmaker that had the vision, at least where the company is going. They might not be the greatest business people, but they bought into the company's business plan and work. They'll bring in the business. They could appreciate the fact it's an entrepreneurial spirit even though they don't have that part, they'll be that rainmaker bringing the business and trusting the entrepreneur and the entrepreneurs to work together as a team to make the holistic things together.
Yeah, and it's funny. I've never really thought of it that way. It's almost like you have an entrepreneur who's probably a little bit more well-rounded than the rainmaker. Maybe the rainmaker's more at the top of the funnel, as they would say, from a sales perspective. Yeah. But that's interesting in saying that having all of those different sorts of roles within a company help it grow and thrive. So let me ask you, what is your formula for really hiring skill sets that best position your company for growth? And I'm going to take and coin this phrase from something that you said, as you would say, to make your company whole.
Right. I appreciate that. So I'll answer really on two fronts there. One is that a big game changer for me in my career was when I was introduced to EOS, Entrepreneur Operating System, a way, coaching way to run a business, and gave a lot of concepts. But even prior to that, the one thing which always held sacred is that you have to surround yourself by people that their strength is your weakness and vice versa. Nobody's perfect. There's no one's that read a 10 out of 10. There are people that are great, you call them 8. Superstars, you call them 9. Perfect doesn't exist. What's the difference between 8 and a 9? It's basically if you took everyone's skill set and said, okay, this you're a 6 out of 10, this you're a 7, 8, 9, 10, you're averaged out, you're an 8. That's a solid, great person. A 9 is where the person has one of the same items are a 12. Everything else the same, 1 to 12. You throw a 12 into the mix, you're a 9. If that person would match up with someone else who's 6 is a 12 and 12 is a 6 and work together they form a perfect 10. So you want to find something to make whole. That's why in a marriage, that's to make whole. A man and a woman to make whole. Now, living in a world today, people have comments, but coming back from the Bible end of it, that part, that's the concept. You want, even in any relationship, you want to make whole from the difference to come together. So since I went to EOS, is one of the things I've learned is that is when you hire people, and I apply this to a lot of different aspects of opening businesses and championing the cause and why should you do podcasts? What do people do what they want to do? It's called GWC, where it's get it, want it, capable. So the person get it, they get the job, they get the position, they get what's going on. Do they want it? Do they want that specific thing that they hear about it? That's what they want, they're passionate about that, and are they capable? I tell a story. I used to weigh 100 pounds more. I did the band surgery. I was very nervous when I did it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I was very nervous that if you lose weight too fast and you get surgery after. I went to the gym 2 hours a day for that first year.
Prior to that. Oh, the first year.
No, post that. When I did the surgery, so this way I wouldn't just have, you know, the weight loss quick, but also like it will, you know, be able to work out. And I took up tennis. I wanted to do something I'll be able to do for life. So I went to the gym, I had a trainer, and then I had a trainer playing tennis every day, 6 days a week, only miss Saturday. And I was out the court, and the trainer was telling me, Zahir, you want to know something? Look around the court here. America would have the best tennis players in the world if the rich parents funded the poor kids that wanted to play tennis instead of trying to force their own kids to play.
Right.
Because their kids didn't double you. They didn't want it. So he was actually showing me that the poor kids would come, watch, and when the other kids came late or left early, they took their slot in personal training. And that's how they learned. So I used to hire people. If you'd buy me, say, Ira, I have this great person for you. You want to hire them? You say yes. And I met them and I hired them. Now I say, let me talk to them. I'd start the conversation with, what do you want to do? What's your want? What's your W? And if the W matches the position I had, I hired them. Because I knew already they were an 8 from you or a 9 from you.
Yeah.
But I don't say, I'll bring them in. I'll figure it out. That's a recipe for disaster. So to work for the organization, I want to find people that their want is the piece we're missing. Because when you have a team that balances each other out and everyone is wanting it and they get it, you could teach someone how to be capable, but you can't get the want.
Well, you know, that's a very good point, because also you don't want to have a whole team of entrepreneurs. You want a diversified group of people whose skills help enhance each other. So how does that come into play? And what are those skills within that entrepreneur that are the difference and help make a difference within your company? So that's two questions there. Go ahead.
Right. So I think I'm, you know, as you're saying, I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm not sure. It's not like, I'm not sure I don't want a company of just entrepreneurs. It's like when you have an army, you know, you have to have only one, you know, in order to be a king, you have to have servants and like that, you know, that type of, there's some analogy.
Absolutely.
Like that, like,
absolutely. Right?
But I'm not sure it's for entrepreneurs. I think that if you could put a company together of entrepreneurs that respect their weaknesses to the strengths of the people around them, that I think is much more powerful. as long as they're like no ego. If they're willing to let us do the work sometime, now you use a stereotype, the entrepreneur is not so much of an ego, but they use typically not stereotype, and they're not gonna be detail oriented. So yeah, I'd rather find a detail oriented person that has a spirit about them. They think out of the box. They might not take a risk to go on their own. That's why they're entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. Spot on. You're spot on.
So the truth is, I want a company of entrepreneurs only.
Mm-hmm. But don't put too much coffee. Can't have coffee with those entrepreneurs. If they're all entrepreneurs, you have coffee, you're going to have a really, really energetic team.
But interestingly enough, I'm thinking through in my technology team now. I have great technologists. When you meet them, they know the product. They live in the trenches. But when they have great ideas, but then in the previous companies, they said, don't open your mouth. Yeah. Your job is to do this and go home.
Yeah.
So there are entrepreneurs. You're thinking entrepreneur from the top down. I want great employees that have an entrepreneur spirit, I should say.
I think that's a good way of looking at it, because I do think one of the questions I'm going to ask you, and let's ask it right now, where do entrepreneurs do best? Because you could be an entrepreneur, but maybe you're at a company that doesn't really value that, or they don't really encourage that sort of spirit. So I think you have to have a match on both ways. So tell me, if you're an entrepreneur and you're a professional, what type of company should you be looking at?
So I think that you want a company that, I think two things. Number one is they're result-driven versus micromanage-driven. Like, you could ask me a bunch of questions, but tell me what you want me to get to at the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the month. And as long as I get there, you could check in, but be fine, number one. I think number two, what I think is really, really important to most entrepreneurs is that the company is willing to make changes based on data and reality in front of them, and not just, well, this haven't been doing it for the last blank number of years. Mm-hmm. I think if they get those two freedoms, they'll stay there for a very, very long time.
Yeah, that's a real frustration for an entrepreneur, resistance to change. You have to be able to also, it's hard when we've all been in situations where people don't embrace the change because they've been doing something a certain way for a very long period of time. So you can really run into some walls, and you have to have that spirit and that resiliency to push through and to also influence and encourage folks around you to make that next step.
I want to make sure you know about the other podcast from the Agile brand, the award-winning show about marketing strategy, technology, and the customer experience, and building the brand of the future. It's called The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, and in it we talk with leaders at some of the world's top brands, the MarTech platforms that are leading the way, and other thought leaders in marketing, CX, and digital transformation. Now in its fifth year with over 400 episodes and 1 million downloads, make sure you check it out with new episodes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. To listen to the Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can go to theagilebrand.show. That's theagilebrand.show. Now let's get back to the show.
So let me throw something by you. According to Dell, by 2030, 85% of us who are in the workforce will be doing jobs that don't even exist yet. AI and automation are probably a big reason why. How do you see the entrepreneur, or for that matter, the rainmaker's role, changing or adapting?
So I have a little bit of a different potential perspective there. I do think that AI is making a major change in the world, right? We're doing this podcast. I would believe that once we're done with this podcast, it used to be somebody in the past that would spend a couple of hours going through it, changing the sounds, right? And probably today, you might spend minutes,
right,
and then reviewing it. So I really think that the entrepreneur, the visionary is going to be able to still do the same job. But instead of relying on a human for a lot of the things, they're going to rely on AI, have a lower level human. So they're going to have, I think the world is going to be the lower level human, the more entry level person coming out of school that's willing to execute at the low level or higher level execute, and you have the entrepreneur at the top. The people in the middle that, oh, you need me to edit your videos for you because I have experience, and I just want to tell someone the vision. That lower level person using AI with the vision of the visionary could get things done. So I think a lot of the middle roles in certain industries are going to be cut out. Middle management has been cut out with technology. The next level of middle, it's going to be the entrepreneur and the entry-level workers. Those are the two ends of the spectrum. I think they're going to have a better role going forward. But if you notice what's happening, we're opening a gig economy. Within that, we used to be the top-level, bottom-level describing. that person in the middle now just leaves the company they're at and opens up a service for someone that doesn't have such a big vision, but they could outsource their work. They used to, you know, $50 an hour, like, you know, Upwork and all these different places. I think the gig economy is starting to flourish even more because it's easier to, hey, just go online and TikTok and this and make a video of what you do. Yes. And so the shakeout's going to keep continuing. So I think businesses are going to get smaller. A lot more smaller businesses opening up.
It's fascinating. And I think we're seeing this happen so quickly. It's just amazing the pace at which the whole digital world is transforming everything. So, which leads me to another question. The pandemic brought so many of us into a situation where we're working remotely. How does that change of remote working really impact the entrepreneur? Will they still have the same influence and the same ability to make change if they are not in person working?
I've been thinking about that. I don't know fully the answer. I think that even while people are working remote, they have systems in place where they're able to come to the office every period of time and things along those lines. And I think they might actually shine better because when people come into an office, let's say once a week, once every other week, or twice a week, during that time, they're not doing the grunt work. They're just talking and brainstorming. The entrepreneur and the rainmakers control those conversations. So the truth is, there's devoted time for that. In a normal workday, the underwriters are thinking about going back into the banking background, right? They're working all day in the trenches out talking to them. But now when you come on once a week only come together, you see that entrepreneur talking to the underwriter and they start, the person with ideas, that's what happens in those meetings. So as I'm talking out, they might thrive a little bit better in these types of environments because the times are in person, everyone's in person speaking the same type of language.
I agree. And I think there's definitely communication lost, whether it's a text, whether it's an email. You know, the written communication can sometimes be misconstrued or not understood 100%. But I know when I'm next to my colleagues working, haven't seen them for a while, the energy, the camaraderie, the collaboration, and really just the body language goes a long way in understanding people. You're missing part of that when you're not sitting next to them on a daily basis. So yeah, I think it's an important concept. I found something else. I find that some people don't know what the word entrepreneur even means. They think that I'm making a mistake when I say it. So when I say entrepreneur, you obviously value that, but do you think it is something that companies should understand and maybe, you know, in order to stay competitive, should start to embrace that sort of mentality? Or perhaps they always have and just never had a name for it. But I guess what I'm asking, should they start seeking out those skill sets that fall underneath of that definition of an entrepreneur?
You know, mostly I think it's they never had a name for it. And I think it's like, you know, they say like most people running companies were that C student with a lot of potential, you know, there they go. So it's like—
You weren't a C student. I see you as an A student.
I was a D.
You know? Oh, you no way. We'll talk about that another time, but I have a hard time believing you were a D student.
So I look at it. And what you're saying is that I feel that the title, like they looked at the entrepreneur as like the troublemaker trying to change the company.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And there's a title for that. And there's a way to nurture and benefit from that person. I think that starts changing the different habits of what takes place. So I think it is a positive. I do think it's a matter of a name. I think if people know they identified, they could walk into a meeting and they could say, I am. Because think about it. If I'm the entrepreneur, what am I when I walk into my company? I came in to describe myself. Hey, now you're in a box. There's the box you're in. And let's beautify that box.
Right. Yeah. Now let me ask you this. As a CEO, how do you balance that inherent risk-taking nature of entrepreneurs, right? They have somewhat of a risk-taking personality within an existing corporate culture. And are there any kind of structures you think companies should or could put into place that measure the ROI on entrepreneurship sort of initiatives?
So the reality is, I think every company is doing it again, without the name, right? Every company, they sit down with their executive meeting, and they say, we should try this. And they decide, okay, how much we put behind it? What do we have to see coming from it? They didn't look at it as an entrepreneur. Someone could have said, oh, Joe in the office said we should try this. Maybe Joe in the office, he's the entrepreneur. But I think now they have a name. It's just like GWC. It makes sense. You should only hire people that get it, that want the job. It's not rocket science. But when you heard it, whoa, crystallized, the light bulb moment went on. You realize, oh, that's why that worker didn't work. But myself and the organization, like I was saying before, when someone comes to me with an idea, I say, okay, how much time of your day do you want to devote to it? And what's the KPI if it's successful or not? Okay, I'm willing to take the calculated risk. Let him spend 20% of his day. Because I said the upside is blank. I saw a very interesting thing from Jeff Bezos has written about his book. He used to always make sure that a certain percent of the of his operating expenses was on risk ideas.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
He once worked, he goes, how does every company work? They try a lot of different things. The mistake is they become a day two company. Whatever works, they put down more money behind it. They pull everything else off. So they don't create new things. And he wrote, basically, he once walked in and says, by the way, how much money do we have right now in different ideas that we're trying? And he said, it was like $200 million. No. For a company our size, it's not a half a billion, but don't sound wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. How are we going to find that next, you know, Amazon Web Services? How are we going to find the next thing if we're just like dabbling? You can't always play it safe. So, you know, to a large extent, it's a matter of nurturing those ideas and giving it the title, Entrepreneur of the Week, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way we do it. Who's Entrepreneur of the Week?
I think you're right. And I think another thing that you just kind of, wow, aha moment for me is that you probably have people who are both entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs. You can have people that may not be afraid to take the risk because they're taking the risk inside of a company where they're protected, but they've also had the experience, I would imagine, like a Jeff Bezos, who obviously has a large risk tolerance on the outside in being an entrepreneur. So what are your thoughts on that? Can you be both? And I think you're probably both.
I think that an entrepreneur is an entrepreneur. You know, someone used to ask me over all the years, what's the difference between a good mortgage broker and an underwriter? The mortgage broker gets all the money, goes out to the parties, brings in the business, right? And the underwriter sits in the office. What's the difference? You know the difference is when they came into the business, typically who was able to take the risk?
Right.
If someone comes into the firm and says, I can't afford the risk, okay, I'll pay you $500,000 a year, $250,000 a year, $100,000 a year. You're the underwriter. You get branded as the underwriter. The broker came in, took all the risk, the rainmaker. So I think an entrepreneur is an entrepreneur who either wasn't ready to take the risk or the opportunity didn't show COVID. Like sometimes if I was working in a little company that I could only move the needle by 10% and I on my own, I could move a bigger needle because I could get involved in a bigger play. But what if I got a job to work at Disney tomorrow, right? I can move Disney by 10%. My own idea is not big enough than the 10% swing at Disney at different points in my life. So, but there is a big risk on the entrepreneur from a boss's perspective. Because if slowly but surely the entrepreneur has the ability to act as an entrepreneur without taking any risk and for the branding of the company, the issue they run into is that after a while, hey, that idea was mine, they got credit for it. That idea was mine, I got credit. It's not that risky anymore to go off on their own. So when someone has an idea and says, I want to do this idea, and they can't try it in the office,
right?
It's not proven. But if they tried it, and then they say, we're already working. I wanted to make it better. My boss said no. The boss is nervous to let them try things because then you're going to take that idea, go with
it. Go somewhere else. Yeah.
Right. So my reaction to that is a lot of times is, hey, I used to tell my brokers, if you're good enough to go off on your own and open your own company, we can make a lot more money together. Let's figure it out early. So I paid a higher commission to them earlier because in the mindset they were here for life, and we grew a lot further together. That was the recipe for the success over all those years.
Well, I always like to leave listeners with an actionable takeaway, something that they can think about to help them along their career journey. So I want to ask you if you could provide the top three ways an aspiring rainmaker or an entrepreneur for that matter can create significant value for their employer.
So, you know, you want to take an action. Let's try to bring it down to one call to action.
Okay.
I think that the one call to action is they should look at the person they report to. Ask themselves, how can I provide more value and make that person be more valuable than the firm? Because no one makes more, as you know, from corporate America than their boss.
Yes.
So if their boss is making $100,000, they're never making more than $100,000. If they would sit down with the boss and say, listen, tag team the boss, say, let's work together. And Mr. Boss, you think you could be worth $110,000. What can I take off your plate and work on so you could grow? Because if you grow to $110,000, then I could grow to the 100 and keep moving that approach all the way up. And if the entrepreneur gets to a point where the entrepreneur is working directly with the president of the company, the same idea. Mr. President, I see you spending time on blank, blank, and blank. Why don't we make that more efficient? And this way you can have more time spending on other things that can help grow the business and keep moving that up. So the value is take the burden, ask for it, take the burden off, of the person that you're reporting to. And this works to have someone at the entry level all the way up to the top. Because when people at work and they see an employee, a boss, and say, why does the boss make so much money? Looking in reverse, you know, they make so much money. Mm-hmm. Because their boss relies on them.
Yeah.
Think about the people you trusted the most. They weren't the most competent. They didn't were the most talented. But you know, when you gave them a project, they got it done.
Right.
You want to become that person to your boss. And that's the way. Look how you think people below you that are competent. You want to come back to the boss. If you're an entrepreneur and you take the competence, then you fly. But not because you're going to cut other people. You're going to help the people above you keep moving up and up and up. And the company grows. You're able to spread your wings.
Well, that's excellent. And listen, everyone, you've heard it from someone who has been there and has worked his way up and has created empires. So I think that's some great advice to listen to. And Ira, it is always a pleasure. Congratulations on your success. Keep inspiring and motivating. And for those of you who want to learn more about Ira, his information will be in the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to the Innovation Economy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to subscribe on your podcast app of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.innovationeconomy.show. The Innovation Economy is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, let's keep innovating.